Good morning. It's Friday, October 10th, and you've tuned into North Idaho News of the Week. I'm Jack Peterson, and I'm here with Chris Bessler. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Jack. How are you today?
Very fine. It was, as we were saying right before the mics turned on, it's one of those, it's one of the last very nice days.
Yes, but one of those last kind of warm, it's windy out there too, where we're going to have a bit of sun, and then this weekend it turns.
Mm-hmm.
Snow predicted in the mountains.
That's, yes, that's what they say. But today is supposed to be nice. I think there's a chance of rain later on, but right now it's gorgeous and the high is in the 70s and it's nice. It's a little overcast, but you know, maybe that'll clear up. We're here also with Zach Hagedon, the editor-in-chief of the Sandpoint Reader. Good morning, Zach.
Good morning, Jack. Good morning, Chris.
Always nice to have you here, and it has been a busy week around here, especially in the city of Sandpoint. You have the big story on page 4 of the Sandpoint Reader. I always consider it page 1. It's really the front page, but it's technically on the fourth page, and we'll be talking about what's going on at city council with the mayor and with the city attorney as the legal counsel dispute. But first, some headlines. The federal government shutdown is currently is still in place. No bill funding the government past October 1st has been put in place as of yet. This still affects largely locally the Forest Service, and the Sandpoint Ranger Station remains closed. Forest Service employees are on unpaid leave until the shutdown ends. And at the state level, a little article here in the B, or sorry, not in the B, in the Reader, but from Idaho Ed News, that says that the state legislature will join the defense of the tax credit in the suit against the state tax commission over House Bill 93. That's the tax credit for private schools in Idaho, that the legislature will join in on that suit in the defense. In other state news, a former Idaho legislator who is currently running for U.S. Senate, Todd Achilles, has filed a complaint with the U.S. Office of Special Counsel about messages regarding the U.S. government shutdown that appear at the top of U.S. Forest Service websites. Those messages have been noticed, I think especially locally, but nationwide. Last Friday, Todd Achilles of Boise, who was a Democratic representative, he's running as an independent for U.S. Senate, filed a complaint alleging that the U.S. Forest Service Chief Tom Schultz has violated the Hatch Act by displaying what Achilles called overly partisan messages appearing on the Forest Service's websites. Down in Coeur d'Alene, the Coeur d'Alene tribe bought back 30,000 acres of their historic homeland. Nearly 30,000 acres of timberland was returned to Coeur d'Alene tribal ownership following the sale of property by Stimson Lumber Company. It had land that the tribe lost during the late 1800s within the boundaries of the Coeur d'Alene Reservation will now be owned again by the Coeur d'Alene tribe. Here in Bonner County, the Road and Bridge Department was approved to adjust its 2026 budget by a little more than $2.5 million, an increase over the last fiscal year after receiving unanticipated funds from excess tax revenue from the state and its general fund. The extra funds will go towards asphalting the remaining 5.7 miles of Cleggstone Road and towards replacing the Kokalala Bridge. Also, in an administrative note from Bonner County workers will get a 4-day weekend in late November. They will get Thanksgiving and the day after Thanksgiving after Bonner County commissioners approved to remove the Juneteenth holiday to give staff the Friday after Thanksgiving off. This decision based primarily on a staff survey, which asked county employees to vote on three options. One was replace the Juneteenth holiday. One was keep it as is. And one was to let individual departments decide whether they'll stay open. Of the 203 employees who responded, 78% stated that they'd rather have the day after Thanksgiving off. Aside from an extra day to spend with family, it was also brought up that the property tax deadline falls the day after Juneteenth, which has created some issues with the office being closed close to the deadline. Now the big headlines are in the city of Sandpoint, or the big news. We discussed when last we met here in this studio, we were talking with Jack Freeman of the Daily Bee, who had the story that the city council had walked out on Wednesday without addressing any of their business. This would be last Wednesday, not this most recent one, but October 1st, which abruptly ending the meeting by breaking quorum. And since then, there were two additional meetings scheduled, one of which was actually met. And the city council finally met to address this issue on Wednesday night. I guess I'd like to hear your tale of, I guess, what happened here. we know that on October 1st, the mayor brought a new legal counsel with an EL, not an I, as opposed to city council. The mayor brought new legal counsel, Will Harrington. This was a replacement of Lake City Law. The city council, at the news that they were no longer represented by Lake City Law, abruptly ended the meeting. And that's about where we left it last Wednesday. Then a meeting had been scheduled for last Friday, and council again, I think three councilors showed up, but that is not enough to make quorum, so the Friday meeting did not go through. And then what happened, Zach, in the city of Sandpoint?
Well, so as you sort of alluded to, you know, it's been kind of a convoluted series of events. We weren't able to really cover that October 1st meeting. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, you know, Jack Freeman had the first piece in the Bee about the walkout. And based on that reporting, you know, and also the recording of the meeting, the issue was that city council felt kind of on the back foot with Mayor Jeremy Grimm showing up to that meeting on the 1st, saying Lake City Law's contract with the city, as you know, it's sort of city legal counsel, their legal services agreement had expired on September 30th, and he was choosing not to renew that contract, irrespective of the council's decision. So he didn't ask council. He just let it expire and said, here's Will Harrington, who will be our interim counsel. And of course, anyone who's watched City Hall over the past 20 years knows that Will is not necessarily a new face around City Hall. He was our city attorney,
yeah,
for a very long time, and then retired. And he's been brought back a few times sort of on an interim basis just to fill in for whatever. So he wasn't so much a surprise, like, you know, personally as an attorney, but the whole situation, I guess, caught some of the council members off guard, and they felt like that was an overreach of the mayor's executive authority to just sort of like let a contract like city legal services expire and then plop his own sort of nominee into a meeting, like an active meeting. Councilor Joel Spiro, who is running for re-election in the November election coming up, he was the first to sort of like raise the alarm bells about that. He said he didn't feel comfortable being seated at the dais in city council chambers and working on city business without what he called, you know, our actual legal counsel. So he sort of started that effort to everyone to get up and walk out. Council President Deb Rule kind of echoed him. They all sort of stood up and left. And as far as I know, and I've asked a couple of folks who would be in the know, we've never seen that happen before. Like, we've never had a council walk out in any sort of recent living memory. So it was definitely a move of protest. They tried to have that meeting on Friday, you know, a couple of days after the October 1st meeting. in an attempt to at least pay the bills. I mean, because when the city council meets, they have to vote first to, like, approve the payments for the city so that we actually function as a city. They didn't do that on the October 1st meeting, so they tried to do it on that Friday. Again, as you mentioned, Jack, not enough people showed up, so they didn't meet quorum on that one. So that brings us to the meeting on October 8th, right?
Yeah,
so this last Wednesday.
This past Wednesday, that meeting was called by the council itself. So there was, I guess, sort of leading into that meeting, there was a pretty good assurance that everyone was going to show up because the council wanted that meeting. And they wanted it specifically to talk about the legal services contract with Will Harrington as the interim attorney. And they wanted to look at the revised, quote unquote, contract for Lake City Law. So if you tuned into that meeting like I did, I didn't go there in person. Ben Olson, our publisher, Ben Olson, he was there in person. So he was the boots on the ground. I was the one, the eye in the sky. And so if you tuned into that, you might have seen him there. But they gabbled in. They did the usual stuff. You know, they passed the bills, did consent calendar or consent agenda and all that. And then they pretty much immediately went into executive session, which is when the council leaves the public sphere and they go back into some kind of, like, you know, private meeting room where they can talk about personnel issues, they can talk about sensitive information without sort of the public deliberation portion. And that's where we kind of stopped covering because that we didn't know how long that was going to go on, and we have press time. And so we wrote our story based on what we could get from, you know, what transpired on October 1st, October 3rd, I guess it was, that Friday, and then October 8th before the executive session. So if anyone's out there reading the Daily Bee and also reading the Reader, you might see different headlines. Because as far as we knew, prior to our press time, that discussion was ongoing because that executive session lasted about 2.5 hours. Jack Freeman from the Bee, you know, given the luxury they have of being a daily, you know, he could stay up and he could watch the whole thing. So his coverage says that this issue is now resolved. So the ultimate decision that came out of that executive session was that Lake City Law is going to be retained as the city's legal counsel. So if there was a game of chicken sort of going on between the legislative and the executive branch, so the council and the mayor, that apparently was resolved with the council winning out. Our piece was more about sort of like the ins and outs of what the fight was really about. And it was really about the council feeling like the mayor did not have the authority to sort of create this contract out of whole cloth and then sort of bring it to them without any confirmation process, without any nomination, like any of that stuff. And I don't think that argument's done. I mean, I think that this particular issue has been apparently resolved. So we do have legal counsel, and it is Lake City Law. But I think that it indicates that there's a serious sort of breach of trust, maybe, and of really, like, defining the roles of the council and the mayor. And I think that's going to continue going forward. I don't know how that's going to manifest.
Well, what does Idaho Code say about this? Are these appointments subject to council approval by code?
Yeah. So Mayor Grimm, he got Will Harrington to write up a legal opinion. And he just distributed that to the council members. And he quotes, you know, Idaho Code 50-602. And he also quotes, was it 204. Yep. So two pieces of Idaho Code. According to the legal analysis that Will Harrington came up with at the behest of Jeremy Grimm, and also which Mayor Grimm quotes from, is pretty clear based on their reading that the mayor has supremacy over these kinds of contracts. So it is the mayor's prerogative of any Idaho city, not just Sandpoint, to enter into contractual agreements with lawyers, with, you know, whoever, staff of any type. The mayor makes that nomination, enters into that contract, brings it to the council. The council then votes to confirm that individual or firm or whoever in that role. And then that becomes an active contract for the city. Where it's a little bit unclear, I guess, and this is probably going to be a discussion that occurs ongoing with other contracts, is after the confirmation process of the council, does that then authority revert back to the mayor? So is the mayor then, again, sort of the chief executive of that contract after the confirmation process? And the council apparently was interpreting that to mean like, no, the council confirmation is what's important. It's not the mayor's nomination. It's not the mayor's sort of role as the chief executive that then carries on. So, I mean, I just don't know. And I think that the mayor, in the interest of just getting past this, sort of like relented. Mm-hmm. I don't want to speak for him, but my speculation is that and again, I was not privy to the executive session conversation, but based on the fact that it ended up the way it did with Lake City Law being retained, suggests to me that the mayor decided that despite his quotations of Idaho code and his assertion, you know, that the mayor has supremacy over these contracts, decided, okay, fine. Like, you guys have your way. Like, we'll keep Lake City Law. But I don't think this argument's over. And I think it's going to come out in other things going forward.
Do we know why the mayor did not, when the contract with Lake City Law initially expired, was there a reason he didn't choose to just extend that contract as it stood?
Well, based on what I've been able to gather, and I have a public records request out to the city, it hasn't been fulfilled yet. They're giving me like a 10-day. So I've asked for communications, you know, related to the timeline about like who knew what, when. But based on what I've heard, the Mayor Grimm was aware that this contract was going to expire on September 30th. As of September 18th is when he found out about it. And there's a little bit of a wrinkle in the story insofar as the city has migrated a lot of its contract data to a cloud-based sort of data system. So they used to do it in-house, and all the contract information, all the deadlines for like when they expired and everything was kept in-house on a computer, presumably. And then they moved it all to sort of this sort of remote cloud-based system. And what happened during that migration was that all the contract deadlines were erased. So every contract in the city, according to their records, was like many years out.
Huh.
So they have to go, and they're doing this right now. They're going back and like line item checking every single contract, which could be hundreds, maybe thousands of contracts that the city has with all kinds of different vendors, trying to reestablish in their records when the deadlines are for their contract expiration. Hmm. So Lake City Law was among those contracts that didn't have an accurate record anymore.
Do they have paper copies of these?
That I don't know. I mean,
paper is kind of, you know, going the way of the dodo bird,
that one is unknown to me, but I do know that it kind of caught everybody off guard. I mean, according to Mayor Grimm, Lake City Law wasn't even aware that their contract was expiring on September 30th. Hmm. So there's that portion of it. And then, you know, as the mayor told me, I mean, it's like, I don't really have an obligation under Idaho code to inform the council of every single contract that is expiring. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he knew about it on the 18th, apparently, and chose not to tell them.
Mm-hmm.
But as he quoted, you know, to me, it's like it's his prerogative not to do that. So, and he would also, I guess, sort of implied, like the implication would be that like council should have known that. So, I mean, they very well could have been like, hey, when's the contract expire for this law firm? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It's, again, there's a lot of tension, like, and so there's procedural stuff. There's sort of interpretation of Idaho code, but there is a little bit of sort of ill will, it seems like to me. Like, I think they're getting past it, mm-hmm. but this wouldn't have happened if they didn't have kind of some like butting of heads between each other. And I do think that based on what I've read from the Bee and what I've talked with folks after the fact, they have worked past this. So I'm really hoping that means that they'll just like move forward and not really have these kinds of conflicts anymore.
This is, so that 2.5 hour meeting, which no member of the public is privy to, was a time to bury the hatchet.
I can only imagine what was said during that. I mean, I can't imagine that it was entirely pleasant.
Yeah.
I mean, just based on the mood and from what I could tell, you know, watching the meeting on the 8th and then from what Ben Olson told me later, it was very tense. Like, mm-hmm. people were not happy with each other.
When a meeting in executive session, we know the results of it, but we don't even know how the different members of the council voted on any issues.
Well, right? they have to come out to vote.
Right.
Do you know what the...
That was the portion of the meeting that I haven't seen yet.
Okay.
Anyone can go back to the YouTube channel, the City of Sandpoint's YouTube. We'll have that, and that's going to be our follow-up next week. I have it on fairly good authority, I think, that there will be another meeting this coming Wednesday where they're going to bring Lake City Law, and they're going to bring Fonda Jovic, who is, you know, has been serving as our city legal attorney. They're going to bring her, and they're going to do a formal confirmation so that everything is like above board. Because looking back at the minutes and looking back at the records, it's even unclear if we ever officially confirmed her as our city like attorney.
It was just executed in previous the previous contract,
right? Yeah, and it I mean, the way it was described to me in a phone conversation with Mayor Grimm yesterday was that it was like implied consent that she was our city attorney. And I went back and I remember covering all this, and I didn't remember an actual sort of like swearing in ceremony. I know that Lake City Law, if anybody remembers back to the festival at Sandpoint, like the gun lawsuit, where, you know, there was some folks sued the city and sued the festival and the county got involved, that whole rigmarole. That's when Lake City Law first sort of entered the city's service, but it was in the function of just that lawsuit. So we already had a city attorney. I think it was Will Harrington even at the time. And we contracted with Lake City Law as an outside third party law firm just to deal with that festival at Sandpoint Memorial Field. Can you have guns on, you know, public property if it's rented by a private entity, whatever. And then they did a good job with that lawsuit. I mean, they
prevailed.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. The city won that suit. And I think that then City Administrator Jennifer Stapleton and then Mayor Shelby Ronstadt were happy with that firm. And so they decided to sort of bring them on full time as our city attorneys. So that's, I think, as far as I understand it, that's the history of like why Lake City Law is even involved with us. I mean, they're based in Coeur d'Alene. And they've been doing that function for us, apparently, according to what I could tell, since 2023. But now we're going to have an official confirmation so that there's no argument anymore about, is this a legitimate like legal services agreement? Are these people actually our actual lawyers for the city, as Councilor Spiro would put it?
Mm-hmm. Well, interesting.
It's one of those wonky stories that it's so full of Idaho code and, you know, sort of like these legal interpretations, but really does have, I think, a lot of profound bearing on what style of city government we want to have. I mean, do we actually want to have a strong mayor? If we all think back to the last election when Mayor Grimm was elected and some of these other council members first got on, that was one of the big themes of that election.
Right. Should we get rid of the city administrator?
Right. Yeah. And then have a strong mayor. Excuse me. And with that mayor having all these sort of like powers and prerogatives, which Mayor Grimm would argue and quote from code that, yes, the mayor does have these powers. So we're seeing a little bit of a pushback maybe against that strong mayor mentality.
And that will be a question. Should the city have a strong mayor? That's really basically it's a full-time position. Now, Mayor Grimm he's trying to make a livelihood because it doesn't pay very much.
It's $25,000 a year.
$25,000 a year.
Which has been a conversation for years about raising the mayor's salary. Right. But
if we want a mayor to be full-time, or should we have a city administrator? And this is probably a good time to mention that KRFY, The Reader, and Sandpoint Online are hosting a candidates forum on Monday, October 20th. And I imagine we have four candidates running for three council seats. And I imagine the whole question of should we have a city administrator or a strong mayor? What do you think, council candidates?
Right.
Will be one of the issues that gets discussed there. Mayor position is not up for election this year.
No.
However, Mayor Grimm will be there because he's going to be introducing or talking about the wastewater plant bond that's going to be on the ballot as well. So hopefully people can make that. Again, that's October 20th at 5:30 p.m. at the Sandpoint Center, which is the big brick bank building at 414 Church Street. We're going to be broadcasting that live.
You got that right. You can listen right here on 88.5 KRFY.
Yeah. All the candidates have confirmed they'll be there, except Joe Spurl said he is actually going to be out of town that day. Mm-hmm. So we've invited him to give us a statement, maybe address a couple of these things. And I will mention that we do have individual interviews with the candidates starting next Wednesday, the 15th. We're going to interview, going alphabetically, it turns out, the two incumbents first. We're going to devote about 25 minutes to each interview with Joel Spurl and Rick Howarth. And then on the 22nd, we're going to devote the Wednesday morning show to interviews with the two other candidates on the ballot. That's Joshua Torres and Joe Tate. So you can tune in for those and hear more about each of those candidates in their own words.
This will be this issue of, I guess, friction between the mayor and council is, how do you feel like this is going to impact the election? Is this going to favor incumbency or favor challengers, or now that apparently it's all water under the bridge, is this not going to have too much of an impact?
I mean, I would. This is pure.
I always like to get you to speculate. Yeah, in the closing.
You love to like throw me a curveball where I have to just sort of make things up. So this is purely me speculating.
Yes,
speculating and editorializing.
Editorializing,
as I love to do. I think that I think the biggest reason why this got resolved so quickly out of that executive session is because there is an awareness among council and among mayor and among staff that the number one issue for the city hall is the wastewater treatment bond. Mm. That is number one priority for the mayor. He said it multiple times on the record that that's the number one thing he cares about, is getting that passed and getting that project underway. And council has also sort of made it clear, especially Council President Deb Rule. I mean, she's been shouting this from the mountaintops for years, that the number one thing we have to do is fix the wastewater treatment plant. So I think everyone's united on that. I think that's the major piece of agreement that everyone has between mayor, council, staff, anybody at City Hall. Like, yeah, this is the number one priority. And this coming election is critical to have that happen. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't look good for the city to be squabbling, you know, over anything at this point. I mean, if we all remember back to when they, the City Hall, they hired a marketing firm to do a survey of the community, and they kept that open for like a month just to get as many responses as they could. And one of the big takeaways, I think, that really kind of shocked and horrified the city was the low level of trust that survey takers responded to, you know, related to the city's ability to manage a huge project like $130 million wastewater treatment rebuild. Everyone agreed in the survey that it was necessary, it was needed. They were willing to pay for it. But the one sort of outlier response was, we don't trust the city to be able to do this adequately. And then to have this sort of like public argumentation, you know, amongst themselves doesn't look good. I mean, it feeds that sort of sense that like there's nobody in charge, nobody knows what they're doing. And again, this is just me speculating, me editorializing. Mm-hmm. So I feel like they needed to get this settled as quickly as possible so that people would kind of move past it. They could move past it. And then we could all just focus back again on like the actual business of the city and not whatever this was, mm-hmm. which, you know, was really a fight about who has the power in City Hall. Is it the council? Is it the mayor? Where are the appropriate guardrails? Who has oversight over whom? That mm-hmm. sort of thing. So
the executive versus legislative branch argument plays out nationally
too. It does. I mean, it's indicative of just sort of how the entire country is reassessing how it runs itself, I guess. I don't know. But really, I think that everyone agrees in City Hall. And again, I'm not speaking for them, and I would hate to speak for them. Mm-hmm. But I do have a sense that they feel like the wastewater treatment plant bond measure is probably the biggest priority. This is not. And if it's going to affect the election in any way, it's going to be, oh, you know, people are going to be like, well, they can't even agree on who's the lawyer for the city. Mm-hmm. So I think that getting past it is probably their main priority.
Instilling trust that, you know, if that bond passes, it's going to be properly managed.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Our time is at an end here. It is 8:33 on Friday morning. Zach, I guess thank you for joining us. Anything else you want to mention? Any highlights of this week's reader or upcoming?
Oh my gosh, there's so much stuff going on. Like, I don't know if you saw the calendar.
It's a busy weekend.
There's a lot of stuff going on. I mean, it might be the end of the summer season, but
We have Oktoberfest.
We've got book readings. We've got
Applefest at the, and then there's Sandemonium.
Sandemonium's happening.
Anniversary of the Sandemonium, which is a nerd fest that they're happy to call it a nerd fest, basically. Yeah.
We've got an artist opening at Ponderay Winery with Christina Ludwig. There's so much stuff. Tons of movies at the Panada. I mean, we've got the Idaho Sagebrush Navy film documentary going to be screened at the Panada.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We've got, you know, ski movies already happening. I mean, we're in that season where, you know, the Panada starts showing a lot of skiing, snowboarding sort of adventure films. Even Newport's got some kind of like murder mystery play coming up. We've got tons of local music. Yeah, it's a busy week.
It certainly is. Well,
will be busy too, I'm sure.
Will you be going to, it's time for everybody to make their choice or try to do both. Is it Oktoberfest or is it the Sandemonium?
Oh, you do both.
You can do it all.
Yeah, that's right. And you can swing by the Cedar Street Bridge for the Apple Fest, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I think that's a kid-friendly event.
Yeah.
So. Speaking of kids, I got to do a shout-out to Pepper Bessler.
Okay.
Who happens to be listening. Really listening.
We didn't bore her with city council.
Yeah, I don't know. City council may have her onto something else, but 2.5 now.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for tuning in, Pepper. Thanks for tuning in, everybody else. Zach, thanks for dropping by. Good, always good to talk about the business of the city of Sandpoint with you.
And my pleasure.
We'll go on now to Otto's Eclectic Mix, starting off with Mr. Dylan here to kick things off on Friday morning. Thanks for listening to North Idaho News of the Week.